Let's fight like demons. And when I say let's fight like demons, let's watch a movie with a bunch of people getting killed in a desert. Beef, wine, and shenanigans, ladies and gentlemen. Stephen Van Patten, as always, joined by Kirk Johnson and Mark Abbott from our respective domiciles here in picturesque Brooklyn, New York. Fellas, I would ask how you doing, but shit, I saw you yesterday at the freaking Brooklyn Horror Con.
Yeah,
Brooklyn Horror Con.
And that's, yeah, because we actually have not been in person with each other as much as we used to post, you know, in this post-COVID world. So it was nice to get out and, you know, make a couple of bucks, shake some hands, kiss some babies, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it was a pretty decent time.
It was cool.
Mark, did you enjoy yourself?
I did, and I have to say I'm extremely, extremely proud with Kirk.
What'd I do?
I'm extremely proud of him because Kirk could have walked out of there with a small arsenal, but managed to compose himself. And that gentleman that was selling the
ladies and gentlemen,
the swords and the
it was spears. Not easy,
dude. Spears. Now, I've been to cons before. Now, outside of a Ren fair, yeah. I don't think I would have ever imagined going to a con where somebody's actually selling handmade spears.
Yeah.
That was impressive.
That was. He was also the same almost want to say arms dealer. he actually had some jewelry, and when I happened to walk by, like, I mean, I think we all individually each got the full Monty. I mean, because he tried to talk me into a cane too, you know.
He tried to talk me into an axe.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, I was gonna buy it too.
which is just high comedy, because I could just see us all packed up in Mark's car with all these spears and things sticking out, and you know, and the cops stop us and you know, it's like, hi, I'm Stephen Van Patten, non-threatening Negro. How can I help be of assistance, officer? You know, it's like, I don't know if we'd have gotten a chance to talk ourselves out of it. Even the jewelry he was selling. I mean, I wear these nice little knives and whatever, but I mean, the stuff he was like, I would have been setting off like, you know, security alarms.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were up my alley, but it was just like, and that, when I started seeing where that was going, I got up out of there too. So.
Yeah.
You know, and none of us went home with anything that, you know, we were going to regret later or
right
whatever.
It's like, hey, I'm a demon hunter, I'm in a book.
what did I say to Kirk yesterday? Kirk is standing at the table like, I want the knife. Please.
And the axe and the spear and the sword that you have.
Yeah, he won't. I don't suspect we'll see him at like New York Comic Con or any of these places. No. like
no. Actually, Mark, you owe me a picture, man. You took a picture from me.
Yes, I do. I need to send that to you.
Yeah.
I will do that.
Yeah.
Do that.
I would not, man. If I had money on that night, that day, that sword is shit.
Sitting right there with you. But yeah, Brooklyn Horror Con. It wasn't just weapons. Let's not send that message out.
All right. It was good. There was a bust of the Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some great artwork, some really great artists. You know, good vendors. And the fans, you know, you know, that's the wonderful thing about small cons like that. Because, you know, when you're privileged to see the birth of a con, it's an interesting thing. Because the dude came as Nightcrawler, for God's sake.
Yep.
Like a full-on 80s,
yep,
you know, Nightcrawler and the Ghostbusters guys, and it's always nice to see that, because I would think that the talent that was there from the Terrifier movie and Halloween and all of that, I think they get a kick out of it too, because I mean, we were standing outside with Amanda Krueger, Freddy's mother,
right. from the movie
from the fifth film,
yeah,
and yeah. It's just interesting that who they picked to come to these things, because you know, you would think, you know, Robert Englund or Kane Hodder, the big names. And it's always the people that kind of did the, you know, the kind of right. one and dones, and then people still appreciate seeing them, and they want to see them, they pay to come see them, and love to stand and have a conversation with them.
Yeah.
And it was drop nice.
A quick 25 for that 8x10.
Yeah, it is. And it's nice. I mean, it was a nice afternoon. You know, people enjoyed themselves. It was. Hopefully next year, yes. do it again, and we just progressively watch it grow and see where it goes from there.
Yeah, we'll be there again too. Actually, I think we'll be there.
Yeah, we'll go again.
Yeah, and who's this? You know, the woman from The Evil Dead was there. She probably had the longest line, to be honest.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I can't remember her name away. Right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah. From the TV series, guys, if the Twitter audience,
Ash and the Evil,
Ash and Evil Dead, yeah, mm-hmm. she was his. She joined the fight after the season one, after episode one. She was working at S Mart,
yeah,
cashier at S Mart.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to find her name, but you know, can't. We're in a show.
Reminiscing over that, let's back up a little bit, because there are some new movies out, and the three of us got to see these movies. It's funny. I was just cracking wise on Dune a little bit, but before we get into that, because I hear there is a strong possibility that there's going to be some disagreement. later on in the broadcast, let's get into something that I think we'll probably all agree on, which was No Time to Die.
Yeah.
And all I'm gonna say, just to set it off, is just like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like. I'm debate, because I mean, like, it was literally one of those things, and this does not happen to me very often at all. I was literally like, I need to watch that again.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I need to watch it. And it's like, it's well over 2 hours. It doesn't feel like it. It was a perfect swan song. That's what I want to call it. It was just a perfect swan song, and I don't want to give it, you know, away.
Don't want to do any spoilers.
No, I don't want to, for this one. I really don't want to do any spoilers whatsoever, because, you know, I think people who see this one with fresh eyes, excuse me, whether they're fans of the franchise or not, I think there was something so like raw about this particular story, and something so relatable.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you're a man of a certain age, you know, and you kind of seeing things kind of pass you by, and you're kind of facing some regrets, and you know, you could easily, and I've never experienced this before with like some spy movie with people jumping off bridges and shit, but it's like, this is easily something that could kind of get you in your feelings.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I'm saying, and Daniel Craig I mean, aside from everybody's performance was top notch on this. This was, I don't think there was one weak link in the whole movie. But that look that James Bond had through most of the movie, that he had this kind of jaded, tired look with only like with him doing anything being this one particular focus that kept him going. Aside from that, it was kind of like, I don't give a fuck. But if it wasn't for this one thing, you know, he had that. It was so intense.
Yeah,
it was really intense. And it was great build on that, man. And the sets, the places they went to, and shit that was going down.
Man, I need to. Somebody needs. You know, that's a book that needs to be done. Somebody needs to do like the official 007 locations. Mm-hmm. Places to go before you die.
Right.
Because, man, that was just, some of those places were just breathtakingly gorgeous. You know, you just couldn't, I mean, when I think back to all of the films, Craig's has to have been, some of those places they went to were just
ridiculous.
I don't know how as an actor, you know, you're like, oh, we're going here for a few days to shoot. And you're like, no, I've got to be here for a few more. Yeah. Y'all going with the production. I got to stay here for two or three more days because this is just absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. Can you imagine Daniel Craig has literally like a little notebook at home with a list of all the locations he's been to and wants to go back to after production?
And probably would never have gone to had they... Yeah. That shot of the waterfall, when they were in, was that Norway?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it was Norway.
That one of Norway, the fjords. I was like,
yeah,
where is that? I would love to go and see that. That's just those. It's an incredible. He had probably the most incredible journey as Bond.
A Quantum of Solace. That hotel in the desert.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know. I was like, I didn't even know that shit existed.
Right.
And that was probably a set. That was something they built in the,
no.
the desert.
No, is that's that real.
A real play. That's a real hotel.
I looked it up. Wow. Yeah. That's a real spot out in South America.
Well, you know, it's like, what's her name's, the doctor's office in Spectre up in the mountain.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm like, who found this? Like you have to be one heck of a location manager when they handed you a list of things and they were like, this is what we're looking for. And it's like, I know exactly where to go look for this.
Right, you know,
it's
so I love Google. I love Google.
I mean Craig, I remember when they announced Craig as Bond. Casino Royale.
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
And I probably, within the group of people that I knew, was probably the most excited about it. And people were like, well, I don't understand like this guy, because they most people didn't know who he was. Mm-hmm. And they were going off of the fine, like, James Bond doesn't have blonde hair and this, that, the other thing. And I said two words, layer cake.
Yep.
Yeah.
And if you have not seen Layer Cake, shut up, because you can't say anything to me.
I remember you told us about that. Yeah. Yeah.
And what's crazy is that I thought about this, the way he is introduced to all of us, the way he comes in as Bond, he goes out in just probably the most perfect way.
Yeah.
So it's like a perfect bookend. This is like a perfect bookend for his run at the character.
Yeah.
And I'm actually happy. I'm happy he agreed to do this last one because Spectre was supposed to be it for him. And we kind of left that door open at the end of Spectre, whether or not he may or may not come back. But they absolutely nailed it with this one. Even with the little throwbacks, You know, I love that scene with him sitting. He's sitting in MI6, and you see the portraits of M, the original M, from the Sean Connery days, and then down the hall is Judi Dench, and you know, and then I, you talk about emotional wise, All the Time in the World, that song, because when he's driving in the beginning to that little town, and they're playing that song, and I immediately, because I remember that from on Her Majesty's Secret Service, because that's the one where his wife is killed by Blofeld at the end. Yeah. And just hearing that and just kind of knowing this is, we're not going to see him come back as Bond, you know, Daniel Craig is done. But just to hear that song and just put it with him and just everything that was going on, just it's an amazing. Somebody needs to make that as this is how you do it correctly. If you're going to close out, out a character or close out a person in a particular franchise, the only other time I saw it done that well had to be Avengers Endgame.
Right.
Yeah.
When we finally say goodbye to all of these characters in our own subtle way. So, you know, kudos to everybody involved with that. That was an excellent, excellent piece of work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's, I thought it would be better than, to be honest, I fell asleep several times in Spectre.
Mm-hmm.
So, but this one, you know, this is, yeah, this definitely a second watch, a third watch. You know, Lashana Lynch and Ana de Armas, I think her name is. Ladies and gentlemen, you know what? If they like we said, no spoilers, but there needs to be some type of offset episodes or series or films with those two characters, either individually or together. But
some kind of round back films. Some kind of circle back on that. Absolutely. Right. No, I agree.
Yeah, they need to have their own episodes and series and shit like that. Do an MCU. Give them their own pilot movies to start off with.
I actually think somebody needs to do either a series called License to Kill or the Double O's and go and start doing stories about all the other numbers in the lot as a poll, because we've got 07, but I would love to see one of those ladies have 001, 002, you know, and just go on.
It'll be great. Be like, I mean, real quick spoilers. They'll be great to do like one episode with the only 00 ever retired. The only number ever to retire.
You mean living?
Right. No. Living. Yeah, I mean retired in terms of.
Well, that could be like the person that they always go to. You know, the person that's always kind of like living off the grid somewhere, and every so often they have to go to him or her to get advice for something
because it's some old enemy of theirs,
right? It's
some shenanigans or whatever.
You know, I'd lose my shit if I found out it was like George Smiley is 001 the guy that John LeCare motioned built his George Smiley character off of is 001, and he's like this old codger out in Normandy or in the Swiss Alps, who's actually still very active, not as exciting and action-packed as a Mr. Bond, but the most brilliant 00 we've ever had.
What do you bloody children know about espionage?
You know who they should get to play that, though?
Cool.
George Lazenby.
Yes,
I like that. All right,
yeah, George. Like, he's still pretty old.
He's still, because he's the only one that's ever played Bond once.
Yeah,
And that would be kind of cool to have him
come
as
back, yeah.
as the, you know,
mm-hmm.
sort of the, you've got all this tech equipment going on, but he's yep. still old school. Like, I can right. tell you how to pick a lock. I can tell you how to get into
right.
certain places, this, that, the right. other thing.
Kind still of. Has a rotary phone in his shoe. Mm-hmm. Kind of
yeah, yeah. He's still an espionage investigator type dude.
Right.
Knows yeah. all the files by heart and shit. And he was like, oh, you want to share the file on so-and-so? No, I already know it. I wrote it. Right? How do you know?
Piggybacking off a couple of things you guys already said. speaking of the locations, first of all, I thought it was great that not only did they shoot in Jamaica,
mm-hmm.
but they actually used real dancehall reggae music.
Yes.
I think that's big. I think the fact that Mad Lion woke up one day, opened up his mailbox, and was like, yeah. hey, what a guan? Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
I think that's big. Yeah. I think that's fucking awesome. Okay.
Yeah. You know what I thought was awesome? Lashana Lynch probably thought it was awesome too, seeing how family's Jamaican.
Well, yeah, exactly.
yeah.
And that's yeah. you know. Man. And I mean, and we can also go into how the diversity of the film didn't feel like tokenism.
No, it didn't.
Didn't feel like tokenism. And it was just like a nice balance.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't just have one black person.
No.
And you didn't have just one type of black person. So no. to Kirk's whole, are there black people in it? You know.
Yes. Yes, there is. And more.
Quite a few. Quite a few.
And more.
And I do appreciate the fact that we did not get, because for a minute, that's where I thought we were going, the dizzy female agent that's like, oh, this is my first gig and I don't know what to do. And then the next thing you know, you're sitting there like, uh-oh, there's a whole room of people in trouble
yeah,
with
basically.
This girl behind the
right.
Well, we did get that, didn't we?
Yeah, that's what
yeah,
I'm saying.
Yeah,
that's what he said.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
I was appreciative awesome. Of that because normally yeah. in these kind of films you have,
yeah.
you know, or in the past Bond films, she's always just been sort of the, you know, this
like,
is my
right. Yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah.
This like is my first coating. Assignment, and
mm-hmm. and yeah, and kudos to Rami Malek. He on my list at least is one of the scarier villains that Bond had to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And aside from him being able to deliver a line so well, along the lines of the who's the character, who's the guy who plays Blofeld?
Chris Waltz.
No, I think it's Platt.
Christoph Waltz.
Yeah, he's on the line. Yeah, he's same sinister kind of. He has these eyes that are so, like, you know, you there's eyes. You know, you see a character and they have these big eyes like an anime and shit, and they are full of life and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And now he had these big eyes that were just black and dead, which I find a horrifying combination of big dead eyes, like mm-hmm. they're staring. Not even a shark's eyes either. It's just like an ethereal kind of evil that's coming out of that dude.
Right.
That, you know, when he talks and he's on screen and he's telling you about stuff, you can't help but just shiver all the time. Especially if he's looking at you.
He plays those characters very well.
Oh, man.
I think, I honestly, the most intense character I ever saw him play mm-hmm. had to be in Inglourious Basterds. When he was playing the Gestapo.
Oh, I wasn't talking about Christopher. I was talking about Rami.
Oh,
I was talking about Rami Malek.
I thought you were still on.
I'm sorry. No. I was saying Rami Malek's mm-hmm. evil character is along the lines in terms of scary as mm-hmm. Christopher Waltz.
Mm-hmm. But
Rami Malek is the, I mean, there were some critics that didn't like him, so he was one note and blah blah blah. And it's kind of like, nah, he's not one note, man. This cat is a damaged dude.
I don't think you're listening to the movie if you came away with
Rob Malik being
that performance being of one note. I mean, granted, for me, it was really more the fact that the weapon is the concept of that is the scariest thing. Like, basically, Howard the Duck could have that fucking weapon,
right?
But then this becomes a different kind of Howard the Duck movie.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
This is a real WMD. This really is a real WMD.
It really is. When you
this is a generational shit too. This is a generational WMD. So, ladies and gentlemen, just go see the movie.
Yeah, basically, and that's it. And Mark, real quick, just to piggyback off something that Mark said, because Spectre was interesting, had its moments. Maybe not the best in the franchise or the run or anything else like that. But I think with Spectre, in terms of, you know, his Daniel Craig's performance and the whole thing like that, I think he was looking at the door.
Yeah, he was.
And this inspired a different kind of performance out of him, I think, because when I imagine as he was reading the script, he probably realized this is some legacy shit right here.
Right.
And yeah. I feel like his performance in Spectre versus his performance in No Time to Die, like he knew what he was dealing with and he brought a different kind of thing to the table.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that was my one little observation about that, since Spectre had come up. But yeah, oh my God, just an amazing time. Definitely worth the $20 or whatever you're going to spend to get out and see this thing. And especially if you're a fan of the franchise at all. Mm-hmm. If you call yourself, you know, because for me, I mean, it was like my first Bond was actually Roger Moore, and
mine too.
And I got to be honest, I was always kind of in this sort of like I can take this or leave this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sean Connery, I ended up discovering him kind of after the fact. And that felt like the lane to be in. So I, you know, made a point of seeing all of those, and then, you know, Timothy Dalton. You know what was really messed up? And obviously the movie's kind of like any of these legacy characters, like Batman, like Superman, like whoever, like the decade that you shoot the film in bleeds into what happens in the movie in a big way, always does.
Yep.
but I just remember when they were first talking about Pierce Brosnan being 007, playing James Bond. And he was working on this show, Remington Steele, at the time, because outside of Remington Steele, nobody knew who the fuck this guy was. So he's on Remington Steele. They won't let him out of the contract. I think it was NBC or whatever. So it's like years and years and years and years and years later. Meanwhile, Timothy Dalton's having his run.
Mm-hmm.
They finally get Pierce Brosnan in there. And it was kind of like, For me, it was. It was kind of like, and then, you know, Halle Berry was there, and I didn't really feel like they had any like real chemistry. You know, you guys may feel differently about that, but
truth be told, I've never seen any of the Timothy Daltons because I remember reading about the villain was going to be a South American drug cartel thing.
And again, the decade into the movie.
But I remember feeling like, we're going to go after a cartel, but we ain't going to go after people funding the cartel, which is the American government. So I was like, I ain't doing that. And when Pierce Brosnan got it, I felt there was a part of me was like, I'm kind of over the idea of him being James Bond. And it always struck me as it was kind of like Roger Moore, James Bond, more than he had that kind of suave look of being more of a Roger Moore James Bond than a Sean Connery grit to it, for lack of a better term.
Right.
So I was, So I haven't seen any of those. I stopped at Roger Moore.
Right.
So the interesting thing about Timothy Dalton, the drug cartel film was not about the drug cartel.
Okay.
The story is that he is going after the person who tried to kill Felix.
Right.
And it has his license revoked to go after this guy. Mm-hmm. That's what it like. It wasn't about. It just so happened that there was also this element of that because there was another 00 involved in that as well. The thing with Pierce Brosnan that bugged me.
Mm-hmm.
So how the buzz about Pierce Brosnan came about was a Diet Coke commercial. He did this Diet Coke commercial where he literally is playing, almost he's playing James Bond. He's in a tuxedo and he's matching wits with a megalomaniac. And they're like these ninjas coming in trying to kill him. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it's a very stylistic commercial.
Right,
I think when that came out, everybody was like, that's the next James Bond. You're not going to find.
I was saying, I remember, you know what I remember when you mentioned that? Clive Owen. When he was doing those car commercials, the driver.
He was doing the BMW commercials. Yeah.
I thought he was going to be the better Bond.
He played that. I thought
he was better Bond.
The thing is, where I think what happened with Timothy and Pierce, those scripts were terrible.
Right.
Mm.
I can't truly blame them for what they were handed. And it's odd because I've seen things where they've done like some of the best Bond like chase scenes and stuff like that. And the Pierce Brosnan ones and everything are kind of up there. And I'm like, those movies did well. I mean, I know like they stuck Michelle Yeoh in one of those. Was it Tomorrow Never Dies?
Tomorrow Never Dies. So
they were trying to market, you know, they were trying to capitalize on her popularity at the time, doing all the Jackie Chan films and everything. But there was just this air of ridiculousness that not like see with Roger Moore was interesting because that somehow they were able, the comedy made sense.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of worked its way in there, so his kind of offbeat comedic timing felt natural there. And to this day it's this one line in, was it Timothy Dalton's first Bond film.
Okay.
He's at the Rock of Gibraltar.
Mm-hmm.
And they're having this huge chase scene. And he goes off the cliff. And they cut to this boat with this exotic woman laying in the boat. She's on a I guess at the time you would call a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
And she just terribly delivers this line. Oh, these men out here are so boring. Why can't I find a real man? And he falls through the canopy of the boat. And I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. So it's like...
Illusions of Roger Moore.
And I'm like, no, that's not how this is supposed to happen. You know, it's supposed to
happen. I mean,
that's
funny, but yeah, nah.
Yeah, but I mean, but it just seemed like they were trying to kind of bleed the Roger Moore comedy over.
Mm.
And then at some point, they were trying with Pierce to make him a little more serious.
Right.
But then there were just these elements thrown in there that just didn't, you know, I always liked the one-liners that he always had with Q, where, you know, Q's always like, pay attention, 007. And by the way, remember to bring back the equipment in one piece, you know. Yeah. But... Yeah, I once we got to Pierce, I just kind of, there was a part of me that felt, well, he seems a little too old in some regards.
Yeah.
The what you said, Stephen, there was no chemistry at all with him and Halle Berry.
Mm.
You know, Madonna got stuck in one of those movies. I mean, she had she had like a walk on. It wasn't
Die
it wasn't
Another Day made. Was that one.
Yeah, because she did the song
for
the film, and it was just like it kind of they kind of missed their mark along the way, those. And I think the whole point of going back to Casino Royale was to reestablish. Yeah, because
and if you go back it. And
if you go back and look at Sean, Sean's earlier version of Bond is mean. Yeah. He's not, you know, even in Goldfinger, it was one of the other films, Thunderball, where he says to the woman, he says to one of the Spectre agents he slept with, he goes, "You don't think I enjoyed it, did you? What I did was for Queen and Country." And I'm like, well, didn't feel right. And
From Russia with Love, when he smacked the woman he was married to on the train. Right. Yeah, he was pretty.
Yeah,
because Callum Bay got killed. Edited.
And see, that's but that also speaks to, you know, what I was saying earlier about the decade
time
to make the film bleeding into, because check it out. Let Daniel Craig go slap some woman right now. You know what's going to happen?
He's going to beat him up.
Canceled.
No. Well, no, she's going to slap him back. She's going to slap him back. Real hard, too.
Right.
Although I do.
Real hard.
Although there is one. So Never Say Never Again, which is not technically considered part of the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
It
was like a remake of Thunderball.
But there actually is a funny line in there with Barbara Carrere. I almost said Tia Carrere because they look alike. But Barbara Carrere,
yes,
she's about to shoot him.
Yeah,
and she tells him to write this letter and say that the greatest lover he's ever had was Fatima Blush.
Yeah,
and he goes, "Oh, I'm sorry. I think," he said, it's illegal for me to give out endorsements."
Oh, shit. I remember that.
Oh, snap.
That was awesome. That was actually awesome. blew her up with a pen.
And it, there it is. And there it is. So yeah, that's our little trip down memory lane, thanks to James Bond and all that. before we sign out, we did say we were going to talk a little bit about Dune. I'll just set it up and then I'm just going to let you guys go. I'm not sure how to feel yet. And not that I necessarily. I definitely did not walk away from this one with any sort of investment, you know, that I had with No Time to Die, since we are talking about them both here in the same episode. It's beautifully shot. It's nice to see the legacy getting a facelift, you know, and all of that. But I feel... For one, I'm feeling like I'm being set up in sort of this sort of like Hollywood manipulative thing, because now we're going to drag this out into these what's clearly going to be some sort of Dune trilogy. And I don't know. I'm just like I enjoyed it. It was fine. I think the emotional investment that, like, for example, that I had for plenty of other movies outside of No Time to Die, like, I didn't quite catch it. And I don't know if it, maybe because I'm tired and I need to watch it again. I don't know. But Jason Momoa, of course, was a lot of fun. But I don't know. It's like it was just something. To me, it felt like there was something missing. So, you know, you guys have at it now.
Yeah, I think what you're feeling there is it was much more of a slower pace.
Right.
And it wasn't as, and the intensity that was involved, I think, doesn't really come around until the end, mm-hmm. towards the end. So you're not really feeling. I'll say this: I love the movie. I enjoyed it. It's only supposed to be two, actually. It's a duology. It's not even a trilogy.
All right.
Because the book was so long. That the thing is, I think that it took on such a slower pace. Mm-hmm. And you know, as opposed to the David Lynch movie, mm. it was more focused on Paul and what he was feeling and what he was going through.
Yeah, yeah.
As opposed to focus on the politics and the political intrigue and what this means. Mm-hmm. Right. He had a sense of what it means to the family, but Paul's going through some other shit with his dreams and these visions he's having. And I think that's what it is. And it feels almost kind of distant. Mm-hmm. Right. Cause you know, the moment you have with his pet, with Jessica and Lita, mm. as beautiful as they are, you still kind of, there's really very little in terms of intimacy. Mm. I think that's what it is, intimacy. Like a right. strong intimacy with everybody going on. Like even with, you get the sense that he loves Duncan, but the intimacy really wasn't there because he was coming to Duncan like, I have a problem. And Duncan's like, "Hey, be all right, man."
Right.
right. As opposed to like the only person he like has any real moment of intimacy is Chani at the end.
Right.
Mm. Like a real like, and I mean, spoilers to, I guess, anybody who hasn't seen it, it's kind of like, you know, I don't believe you're a prophet, but I don't think you should die without any honor. Mm. You know, that's a moment of, you know, two strangers meeting. One of them is like, you know, I don't think he really much shit anyway, but you know what? I'm gonna hook you up. You know, at least you can die with honor.
Right.
And that was a moment that was like, oh, okay. That was, you know, and Zendaya played that really well. Like for like, you know, like I really kind of hit me the way she chose to play that moment. Because mm-hmm, mm-hmm. it was almost a moment of sympathy for him.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I'll say that. Aside from that, I mean, the great points being the epic scale of the cinematography.
Yeah, the cinematography is bananas.
You know,
no question about that.
And certain things, like I'm reading the book now, and certain things, I got more of an understanding of why everybody loves Duncan Idaho. Mm-hmm. Well, people who read the book, like, oh, what's the big deal? I saw him in the Lynch version, and it was like not a really, you know, he got killed by a screwdriver. Right. But then it's the slow motion screw going to his forehead. I'm like, I think I got killed by a screwdriver, man. Like, man, what the fuck's a big deal of him? This tells you why it's a big deal. Mm. I mean, you get more of a thing like, oh, this dude's an ace pilot, you know, flying this mosquito chopper.
Yeah,
through a laser.
Yeah, those and like, yeah, those
visually, that was awesome.
Thopters, I think they were calling them.
Thopters, yeah. I was being stupid, but yeah, the thopters are awesome.
Sexy as fuck.
The thopters. There's Duncan, and there was one more that was kind of like never got much of, but now you see why he was such a big deal. Mm-hmm. Was like the Beast Raban.
Yeah.
He played, you know, in the Lynch ep version. He was, you saw him more as like this unstable, for lack of a better term, just a buffoon. Mm-hmm. Unstable, violent buffoon.
Right.
And Baptista played him like a real beast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like full of rage and unleashed, with the only person able to hold him back was the Baron Harkonnen,
yeah,
Skarsgård, which is awesome.
Yeah,
this is awesome.
The Baron's facelift, by the way,
the Baron's facelift,
is definitely
whoa.
That to me is probably the biggest thing.
Yeah. Oh, and one more thing, and the Sardaukar. In the Lynch version, he didn't give enough of a, like, you see these dudes running around in black hazmat suits and you're kind of not really scared. Right. Yeah, black hazmat suits. But when you see them in this movie and you see how relentless they are.
Yeah, there's definitely more of a, it's like stormtroopers with AIM.
Yeah, and focus.
Yeah.
Like, and please forgive me for this spoiler. There's that staircase scene, Mark.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When they're coming out, and the Atreides was holding the Harkonnens at the bottom of, like, had the high ground. They're like, well, we got the high ground. They're holding them down. And then he's got the fucking Sardaukar car come, like, not even like silent, like ninja shit. Mm-hmm. You know what? It was like a platoon of fucking storm shadows coming out of nowhere and wrecking shit up. Mm-hmm. That's what it was. That's what it felt like. The Sardaukar were like fucking storm shadows coming out everywhere. So I got to say, I did dig it.
Dune has always been just, Dune is pure sci-fi.
Yeah.
And when you get, when, you know, it's interesting about, and the same thing goes in the realm of fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
When it's at its core, it's slow.
Yeah.
It has to be, because there's a lot to take in. Like, if you look at Blade Runner, and then you look at Blade Runner 2049? Yes.
Yeah.
The second film is more sci-fi.
It's more hard sci-fi.
More hard sci-fi. Very, very, very
meticulous. Yeah.
The world around it plays the biggest role as opposed to the characters within it and the scope and everything. Yeah. I think, like, when you look back at the David Lynch film, it almost feels like we love this material. We want to make this into a movie, but somebody in the back room isn't going to give us enough money to do, like, a whole batch of these things. So we just have to cram as much as we can into this one thing. And
cram.
And then, you know, we're all sitting there like, huh? Right. You know, if you hadn't read the book, you would just like, I think I know what just happened. But this one, basically, much like Lord of the Rings, like, look, we're going to have to do this with two films.
Right. This is world building.
We're not going to be able to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do this movie, but I'm telling y'all now, we're not going to be able to do this properly or give it its just desserts. They tried twice and learned it. I think I'm like, third time's a charm, because at least you learn your mistake. You learned it from Lynch, you learned it from Sci-Fi Channel.
I couldn't get through that.
And you know, somebody at the Sci-Fi Channel was like, well, you know, we could tell a better story because it's TV. We have a few nights to do this. And somebody just completely swung for the fence and it did not, you know.
Well, the cast was horrible.
Cast always plays a huge role in it. I mean, the one thing I'm always careful about that, though, because, you know, people get excited and they're like, oh, so-and-so's in it, so-and-so's in it. And I'm like, yeah, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a great film.
True.
But, I mean, at least we know the people that they chose to get are going to treat the source material with the dignity and respect that it deserves.
Yeah.
Which brings me to my gripe with Kirk, because Kirk had the audacity to say,
yeah,
80s Dune was a movie.
Yeah.
This Dune is an epic film.
Yeah, I did say that.
I disagree, sir.
I don't care.
you ain't even let me finish what I was going to say.
All right, I'm listening.
I was about to say,
yes,
it's an epic experience.
Ah.
So I disagree with you, sir. I didn't get a harum from that guy.
Hold on. I salute you, sir. That was my Duncan Hyde salute.
Because even
well even played. Well played.
Even when the credits open, it's like you get this doom, and then it's like part one. It's yes. Like, it's like,
wait, real quick. I'm done. I don't want to get freaked, you know. But I love that what they did in they changed the focus from the, you know, in the Lynch version, they gave you the prologue with the political intrigue. Yeah. These are the great houses, and right,
yeah.
These are the first world problems of the rich. In this one, they gave you the problems and the gripes of the people of the planet Dune.
Yes.
Mm. When they had Zendaya coming on to talk about it, she ain't talk about these niggas with the money. She's talking about how these niggas with the money are stripping our land and destroying our world. That was, I thought, such a great choice for Dylan. Mm.
And I think a lot of times, like I almost liken it to the opening of Lord of the Rings, because if you've read the book,
yeah,
you don't really get the scope of what's about to happen. Like that, when that movie opened, and you see the armies,
yeah,
on, you know, because I mean, let's be honest, Mount Doom isn't really like the like. I'm like, okay, right, dude, right. You really couldn't come up with something,
right.
But the fact that, you know, when we say the, you know, in the fires of Mount Doom, and you get to see it, you're like, oh yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. And so to get that, because I now understand, because I remember seeing the Lynch film, and I just kind of was like in the theater, like, I don't get what the hell is going on here. What is this is not me. And my father said at the time, he was like, yeah, apparently you have to have read the book to understand what the devil this movie's about.
Right.
And over the years, I've rewatched it and rewatched it, and just been like, I still can't seem to get my head around what's going on.
Right.
But then you get this epic opening where, you know, they're fighting back, you know, and right. then it's just this whole thing, like the emperor is just like, you got to leave. Yeah, like, no. And yeah, the beast is pissed off because, you know, after everything I've done, now I got to abandon.
Yeah. I don't want to say they reduced it to, but they connected it to something really simple and relatable. It's about the cheddar. It had nothing to do with nothing else. When she said it, the spice is everything, and Robin was bitching because they lost so much money. They were like, it's all about the money.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't help but look at it and you're like, huh, like the oil shit we're going through. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's what I mean. When you talk, when you create this this movie, and you're talking about the great houses and the rich houses that have had this power for so long, that they call great houses, and they sit next to the emperor, and the emperor, they're beefing. You know, it puts you, I want to say it puts you in a fantasy worldview, right? But when it comes down to Chani talking about they're destroying us and they're destroying our land, I think it, to some people, and I'd love to say for everybody, for most people, that it connects in terms of just the regular people who have to work this land and farm it, and create the process it to create these things that the rich people make money off of.
Right.
Right. They did something in this that I don't remember them doing ever in the David Lynch movie, was explaining the refineries.
Mm.
Yeah.
There were refineries. They're storage facilities. You know, we didn't get the, and when you realize storage facility refineries, they got people working these things.
Yeah. Mm.
Right. Mm-hmm. It ain't all about just this power struggle that these guys are having. I'm catching a bad end of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that says a lot. I think that's a great way to put it.
To that point, did you maybe feel a shadow of Road Warrior or that kind of thing in there a little bit?
I felt more of a shadow of Lawrence of Arabia for some reason. Because it's a colonial power,
right,
that are using the resources of this land and looking at the people as if they're nothing. And the Duke has an idea of gaining the trust of the people to fight back the colonial powers, that the colonial establishment, which he is a part of.
Yeah.
Henceforth, Lawrence of Arabia. Right. And
you know, and, it's almost like the story of Exodus, where you got when Moses is like, you know what, you gotta have these people a day to rest and give them some grain and give them some food and treat them with a little dignity, you know, and then you get some better work out of them. And folks in the, you know, in the higher powers are like, are you kidding me? You want to actually feed these people? You want to treat them like human beings? And it's like, look what's going to happen when you do. You know, productivity goes up, this, that, the other thing. You know, it's, and it's always. It's
like, what do you think this is, Moses Nabit?
Ain't got no unions here.
There you go. I see you got no bona fide union workers working over here. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's, you know, that's, but it's always interesting when you have a character like that where he sees, you do wonder if okay, are you genuinely feeling something for these people? Or are you seeing this from the political end game, where it's like, you know what? I'm not a cruel man. I'm not an evil individual, but even I know that you're going to get more flies with honey than you do with vinegar. So I'm going to play that role, because that's when everybody around you is like, what are you exactly doing? And it's like, you know, no. We're not leaving here till we get everybody out of these dangerous situations, this, that, the other thing. But because it is a political move, because now you got everybody on your side. Everybody, until of course, you're going to do something to piss everybody off. Right. And they're going to be like, oh, look at you. You weren't who we thought you were.
I do got to say also, just to add to this, that what this Dune does that the Lynch did not do was put into question what you were saying, Mark, the subterfuge that's going on. Because she mentions that the Bene Gesserits had formulated the prophecy of the Kwisatz Haderach amongst the Fremen. And she knows that. And they use that to their advantage. That's something that, you know, the Lynch version, and not trying to beat him over the head with it, but that I was watching this thing about Frank Herbert, and he actually wrote Dune to in criticism of the idea of a one leader, a one messiah, and taking on and having this one messiah lead people to freedom, having one leader and the fanaticism of that could come about it. That's, he was writing a critique about that.
Right.
I think that's not seen in the Lynch version. Right. I'm wondering if we see, the second part of the Villeneuve's, if it becomes more concrete.
I think it will.
Yeah.
I think it will, because, because he did, I mean, from the time they land on Arrakis,
right,
you know, it's you get that sense of, wow, these people are in awe of who have arrived, because, you know, there are many of them, you know, they're looking for, and it's an interesting thing, because it's interesting when you have people, a society waiting for the one, you know, no one's ever waiting for like five or six people to show up. They're always,
only
you know,
for. They can only be one.
There's only one. You know, it's not, it's not, right. it's not like the Magnificent Seven,
right?
You
know,
because even because right. even in that case, they're like, could you just find us somebody that'll help us? I got seven of them to come and help, you That's know. Right. And it's but it's always amazing because I'm not because you're always wondering, well, what is it that you think this one individual is going to do? How do you think? I mean, and it's a recurring and it seems to be a recurring thing in science fiction and fantasy all the time. Because yeah. even with Cameron.
Avatar. You know, if you're going to go deep, brother. John Carter Mars.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The one.
I mean, I'll go someplace that you're going to frown at me on.
All right.
Tarzan. I mean, but right. the whole premise was that this one dude is his one call could get every animal in the doggone jungle. Like there wasn't one tiger out there. I was like, I ain't going over there, man.
Right.
I don't care. It's like,
right. it's like he can't even get help from the brothers and sisters that actually live there. No, I'm gonna let the apes show me how to live and be a person and be a human being. Right. I ain't gonna ask y'all black folks.
No, we're not gonna do that.
You know? Ain't gonna do that.
But it always is always an interesting aspect to almost all of those stories that there's always yeah. the Messiah, there's always
the one who can
the do one person. Even Lord of the Rings, there's one.
I was just about to say that.
Got to throw that thing in, mm-hmm. throw that thing into the fire. Although to for me, to this day, every time I see that scene with when they go into what's his name's son, not Arathorn. Who is the one that had the ring that lost it?
Smeagol? Gollum?
The when they were fighting on the mountain.
Sauron?
The king of the sun, the sun's king.
Oh, Isildur.
Isildur.
Yes.
To this day, every time I see that scene, I'm like, yo, if I had been...
Isildur. Isildur.
What's his name? The elf?
Legolas?
Elrond.
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 Like, you know, Elrond, all you had to do was like, Isildur, throw it in there. Come here. And just chuck him off the edge of the right. thing. And, be like, and come really out did. And be like, he slipped.
Like, yeah.
Nobody has to know. You just,
see, these are things that are like, all right, I got to ask you, all right. Because these are things that, you know, because the movies, you don't get to hear anything about or it passes over. And I realized, you know, Isildur is Elrond's, like, great-great-great-great-great-grandson.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, grandnephew.
Because
mm-hmm. Elrond had a brother. I think it's Elothim or something like that. Can't remember. Please forgive me. He had a brother, and they had to choose. Both of them had the choice between being men or staying elves. His brother chose to be a man. Elrond stayed being an elf. Because of that, you have the Dúnedain, the men who live forever, who live yeah. extremely long lives, and are chosen to be the kings of men,
mm-hmm.
and yeah. go off to another land. And it there's a whole history that mm-hmm. doesn't really that I'll probably do on Amazon.
On the Amazon series
that they're coming out with, but you know that whole history. So you never really. So of course you're saying, well, why he just kill him? It's like, well, you know, that's fam. That one I can't just do it so easy because that's actually fam, and that's not just fam. That's fam that escaped the doom that destroyed everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know Elrond and Isildur's dad are family. Isildur's dad's dead.
Mm-hmm.
His right. brother's dead because the Argonauth is actually Isildur and his brother.
Yeah.
So Isildur's the only one left. If you kill him, you kill that line. Arthur Dayne line. And it goes even, you know, and the thing, this is what I mean. But just, no, you're, I always find that interesting that, you know, Yeah, if you guys had actually went a little further and just, you know, maybe did something before Lord of the Rings, people would be asking why did Eldred just kill that nigga? Why did he just kill them? Oh, hey, he can't.
Look, hold on. Look.
That'll be Elrond the Kinslayer.
Let's put it. Well, the only person who had known what happened in that cave was Elrond. There was nobody else there.
You know, so all them elves gonna be looking at him like this.
It's his word against his, hey, we would.
Yeah, because they could probably just be like, hey, wait. We elves, we don't
sleep. Right. Right,
what
right.
What are you talking about?
Like, right.
What do you mean he slipped?
Right.
Okay, look. It's Rocky, right?
Right. Right.
I didn't see the stone myself.
Elrond can't lie worth a damn.
He tripped. I reached for him.
I reached for him.
And he slipped.
Yeah.
It's like, man. Tell me I'm wrong. You just use the none of you were there. Were you? Tony? Bobby,
he said Tony. Mike,
Tony,
Bobby, Ricky.
Is that the new addition?
Mike, was any of y'all there?
If he didn't slip, why do I feel right, this exactly. way?
I say one thing. I do hope also in the second Dune that they actually delve into why the spice is really so important to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Because that lore, I'm still fascinated by the idea of space travel. Because there are no computers.
Right.
No.
There are no AI. There are no computers. They only have the navigational guild navigators.
Right.
And I had to do a little research. It's like, well, how do they actually travel? And to find out that would be so encompassing in terms of wow, this shit is actually really important to every human civilization spread throughout the galaxy.
Yeah. Which also makes that the most scariest thing, because it's like, what if something happens to that planet? Mm-hmm. Like, what if it gets knocked out of orbit and the atmosphere changes, start raining? Right. You in trouble, you know? Hold on.
And that's called book three. Is that book three or book? Man, I'm doing research on all them books, man.
That's Khan's planet. This is Seti Alpha 5. Oh, you didn't expect to find me here, did you? You thought this was Seti Alpha. Oh, I know what you thought.
Right.
Spice?
Yes. This is not the spice you're looking for. Give me the spice.
That would be pretty messed up, though. Dune 3, Acid Rain.
Yeah. I did a little research, like that background research, man. Mm. Some fucked up shit happens in the second and third one.
Yeah.
To the planet. I say this, if it wasn't for David Lynch's Dune, I wouldn't have even delved into it.
Right.
I'll give him that much. And David Lynch's director's cut of Dune.
Yes.
That was the one. If you're going to watch a Dune, if you're going to watch a David Lynch Dune, you must watch the director's cut. Because there's a thing about the worms that you need to know. And it's only in that.
All right.
That's all I'll say.
And on that note.
On that note.
I think we're going to close this episode out.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for that spirited discussion about this. I'm sorry, what was it? Epic experience?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. An epic experience.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I think epic. We broke down two epic experiences actually today, which was really, really dope.
And if you're feeding for some more Dune, the Foundation is actually awesome as fuck.
Okay. Ah, then there's that.
Foundation is awesome as fuck. Yeah.
So next time we meet, It will be Halloween. I'm just going to let that sit in the air, because there's really no telling what the three of us would do while we're actually recording on Halloween night. So I'm just gonna let that sit. And I'm gonna thank you all for listening and watching and checking us out. I think Mark's probably gonna do full on Gene Simmons makeup. That's what my money's on. So we're gonna go, but we love it. We mean it. Feel free to buy some books from some of us, or you know, something, you know. Because, you know, we got bills like everybody else. Yes, Kirk.
Oh, he's pointing to Hell at Brooklyn Tea and Hell at the
Wayside. Oh, yes. Very good.
What do you thought it was?
I think you were trying to make a point.
Two, actually.
You know what?
All right.
I can't.
Thanks again, gentlemen. We are out of here. We will see you all, and you'll be seeing us next week.